A few weeks back, we covered some of the romantic and often illicit adventures of Spanish kings, from the Catholic monarchs Isabella and Ferdinand to the last Habsburg king Carlos II. And we decided to do this based on the recent discovery, though it was kind of a well-known secret over the years, of King Juan Carlos's numerous love affairs throughout his life. That is, before, but especially during his marriage. Juan Carlos, who was king from 1975 to 2014, when he abdicated, has been known to have what the Spanish press liked to call several special friends in his life. These included members of the Italian aristocracy, actresses, and in the most recent and probably the most egregious scandal, a Danish businesswoman named Carina Larsson, 20 years his younger and shacked up in a mansion basically on the same property of the king's palace. This is absolutely true. It was one of the factors that led him to give up the throne and move abroad. In any event, this once highly respected monarch has fallen into disgrace in a tragic story, if you ask me, of a man whose legacy was pointing towards greatness in Spanish history, and deservedly so. But it will forever be severely tarnished by his blunders in later years. So I became intrigued by this king's philandering ways and wondered if this was what usually happened to royals in their royal circles. The point was to see if womanizing was a behavioral pattern typical of kings, and especially Bourbon kings, or if the man who had helped lead this country from dictatorship to democracy was an anomaly. Now, I knew what my knee-jerk reaction was, but we went ahead and researched the subject to see what we could find. And if you haven't listened to part one, I suggest this would be a good time to pause this one, go to that, and then come back here. Anyway, we've seen that many, if not most of the kings, had a fondness for skirt chasing, and in some cases, their conduct was bordering on the pathological. It was rampant. And the queens had to accept the facts, much to their dismay, though on occasion they found comfort in the arms of others too. More often than not, though, they were the victims. Then again, there were some kings, not many, who did behave themselves for the most part, such as Philip III or Felipe III and Carlos II. In Carlos's case, though, he didn't have much of a choice as he was impotent. Carlos's condition also meant that he would die without an heir, leaving the door open for a period of strife known as the War of Spanish Succession. It expanded into a European conflict that lasted nearly 15 years. Back then, just about any reason was good enough to start a war between the major powers, and this one was no exception. In the end, it was Carlos's choice, Felipe V, his nephew from France, who would take his place. Felipe was actually a member of the Bourbon dynasty and was Louis XIV's grandson. This new family, this Spanish Bourbon line, would become the same dynasty to reign in this country off and on all the way up to this day. This is important for our purposes because Juan Carlos's affairs have sometimes been attributed to an age-old tradition of the Bourbons being famous ladies' men, to use an outdated term, blaming it more on DNA than discipline. So let's take a look at how they behave themselves. Felipe V was supposed to be a major figure in Spanish history. New family, new dynasty, new initiatives. His intention was to bring both economic and political reform to a country that had been suffering from a long decline after poorly managed administrations, excessively large government, wasted resources, costly warring, and an empire that far outstretched its capabilities of being run with any efficiency. Few of these aims were met. But this Bourbon did succeed in concentrating the power of the monarch and the capital, Madrid, in a way that was similar to what had been done in France. But the general consensus is that he fell short of his objectives for a number of reasons. One contributing factor to the slow progress, but by no means the only one, may have had to do with the fact that he was far too preoccupied with his sexual commitments to his wives, which, according to most sources, were frequent and intense, than with running the country. In the world of sex, Felipe would set a standard that would make it difficult for his successors to emulate. Simply put, the man was addicted to sex. He married twice. His first wife, Maria Luisa Gabriela of Savoy, was only 13 at the time of the wedding. He was 18. On their wedding night, she was so frightened She managed to keep him away for a few days. But once she gave in, apparently there was no stopping him. His insatiable appetite resulted in lovemaking sessions on an average of 3 times a day. It was so exhausting that it was said she wished he would take a lover and give her a break from time to time. But he didn't seem to agree. Though some say he had 2 official lovers, many sources claim that his religious zeal made it impossible for him to cheat on his wife. Sort of that classic Spanish Catholic mentality where you are making whoopee day and night and then running to the local priest to ask for forgiveness. When he was away, often on military campaigns, he is said to have relieved the tension all by himself with nearly the same intensity combined with moral doubt. He even sought the advice of his personal confessor because he wanted to know that if he pleasured himself while thinking about her, would it be acceptable in the eyes of God? The priest apparently said God, in that case, would most likely look the other way. Then again, who wouldn't? Maria Luisa died just 13 years later at the age of 26 of tuberculosis. Even so, Felipe apparently continued his feverish appetite for lovemaking with her well into the advanced stages of the illness, and there is even a rumor that he tried to slip under the sheets for one departing, well, you know what, while she was within hours of expiring, but thank God he was talked out of it. It is an exaggeration to say he killed her with sex, but many believe that it most likely precipitated her decline. They had 4 children, 2 of whom would become kings, Luis and Fernando VI. In any event, Felipe remarried, this time to an Italian woman named Elizabeth Farnes. She too was subjected to his relentless sex regime, but had to suffer the added complications of the king's failing mental health, which included a total lack of regard for personal hygiene. Felipe gave up the throne in 1724, but the new king, Luis, died of smallpox just several months later at the age of 17. Luis was married to Luisa Isabella Bourbon and probably didn't have any lovers because of his young age. Apparently, though, she was quite a handful as it was. So Felipe had to be reinstated, much to his frustration and to those of the court. His failing mental health led to his wife, Isabel, or Elizabeth, practically running the country by the end of his reign in 1746. They had 6 children together, one of whom was Carlos III, a future king. Felipe's sex life is extensive, but sticking to the subject of monarchs and infidelity, suffice it to say that he apparently was generally, if not completely, faithful to both wives. He just sort of treated them as palace sex workers. After Felipe V died, his other son, Fernando VI, took over. He was king from 1746 to 1759. He was married to a Portuguese princess, Barbara de Braganza. They never had any children, but they were apparently deeply in love with each other. When Barbara passed away in Aranjuez in 1758, he was devastated and basically abandoned all his responsibilities as ruler. They call it the year without a king, and he died a year later in 1759. They're the only royal couple to be buried in Madrid. Little is known about any extramarital activity. It doesn't seem like he had very much, if he had any at all. So, as I was saying, Ferdinand and Barbara didn't have any children, so Carlos III, his half-brother, ascended to the throne. His reign lasted from 1759 to 1788. He was probably the most prepared and effective Spanish ruler of the 18th century and was married to Maria Amalia of Saxony. Like Fernando, the marriage was successful, but in their case, they had 13 children. The general consensus was that Carlos III and Maria Amalia were very much in love and that Carlos didn't have mistresses, at least any confirmed ones. And if there was any hanky-panky going on, he was very low-key about it. So far, the notorious Bourbon reputation as womanizer seems to be somewhat of a myth, with the exception of Felipe V, who may have been sort of a deranged sexual pervert, but he didn't stray from home, at least. With Carlos IV, king from 1808, adultery on his part was never the topic of conversation, but it was with his wife, Queen Maria Luisa of Parma, who carried out a long and hardly concealed affair with a military officer named Manuel Godoy, Her toy boy would be elevated to the rank of chief minister of the government, and both would try to run the country's affairs during the tumultuous political times of the early 1800s, with the recent French Revolution threatening the future of the Spanish monarchy. Their love affair, as well as some very unpopular political decisions, such as allowing the French under Napoleon to effectively take over the country, combined with the feebleness of Carlos, known behind his back as the Cuckold King, led to a period of ruin for Spain at the beginning of the 19th century. And yet, despite all this, the king and the queen did have their moments of intimacy. She became pregnant 24 times, gave birth 14 times, of which 7 made it to adulthood. Just who the father was of each has been sometimes disputed, but we can assume that Carlos fathered many of them. If Carlos IV had anything on the side, it seems unlikely, but it's uncertain. In any event, it was grossly overshadowed by his wife's political dealings and affair. Their son, Fernando VII, or Ferdinand VII, would become king in 1808, was immediately removed from power by the French, but returned in 1813 and stayed there until his death in 1833. He was quite possibly the most unpopular monarch to reign in Spain. At least that's how everyday history treats him. And he certainly seems to have worked hard to make a solid case for himself. Hailed originally as a kind of savior of the country when Napoleon occupied it, his proponents knew him as Fernando the Desired One. They thought that he would be the Spanish monarch to embrace liberal ideas, but it wouldn't take long for them to realize that he had every intention of reversing the country's drive for a constitutional monarchy and returning it to absolutism. This is another long story which we will deal with in due time. Sticking to the subject, he was married 4 times. His first wife was Maria Antonia of Naples, a first cousin of his. She died at the age of 22, and both pregnancies ended in miscarriages. Then he married his niece, Maria Isabel of Braganza, in 1816. Once again, they had 2 failed pregnancies. The second one was a stillborn, and the queen died while they tried to extract it. His third wife was Maria Josefa Amalia of Saxony, who was essentially signed on because of her German roots, her German genetics, which suggested that she would be especially perfect for childbearing. The problem was no one had prepared her for the part about sex when it came to marriage, and she fled the bedroom in horror when she saw her husband appear visibly ready to consummate. The Pope, in fact, had to intervene and send a letter to Maria Josefa saying that it was both all right and necessary for them to have sexual relations while married. But I guess it was not very effective because they didn't have any children either, and she died from fever, probably an infection, in 1829. Once again, with time running out and no descendants, the court moved swiftly to find a new wife. This was Maria Cristina of the Two Sicilies. They had 2 children, one of whom would become Queen Isabel II. Some people say that Fernando had up to 7 lovers, but in reality, there is little out there to confirm that. His one clear mistress, though, and possibly his one true love, was a woman from Malaga called Josefa de Montenegro, who initiated him in the art of sex. Fernando didn't have a male heir, so his daughter, Isabel, as we were saying, who was 3 at the time, became Isabel II under the regency of her mother. She was declared fit to reign as an adult in 1843 when she was 13 years old. The fact that she was female would trigger a feud over who should succeed Fernando VII that would last over 40 years. They were known as the Carlist Wars. Anyway, did the fact that she was a female change in any way her amorous conduct, or was the Bourbon genetic makeup firmly set in her libido? It seems the latter was the case. She married when she was 16 years old to her double first cousin Francisco of Assis, the Duke of Cádiz. It was a prearranged marriage and apparently a disappointment to both parties. He was reputedly homosexual, and there is doubt as to how many, if any, of her 12 pregnancies were a result of a relationship between the two. The nastiest tongues say that she had a different father for each one. This was obviously highly unlikely, but it is all but genetically confirmed that there were a number of special friends involved in the fathering of her children. And the future king, Alfonso XII, was not the son of Francisco of Assisi, but rather a captain of the royal guard named Enrique Pujmoto y Mayans. Isabel's reign was marked by very turbulent political times, as I was telling you about. It included 3 civil wars and as many as 5 coup d'etats. Rocky times indeed. So it was also possible that her reputation was tainted by political rivals. She was depicted as a nymphomaniac, and there still circulates on the internet numerous images of graphic, actually pornographic scenes in cartoons that were so shocking they would probably be outlawed today. Isabel abdicated in 1868, but her son, Alfonso XII, took over 6 years later. He had already acquired a reputation as quite the Casanova before his marriage to his cousin, Maria de las Mercedes de Orleans, in 1878. They were madly in love with each other, at least that's how the story goes, but she died of tuberculosis 6 months later. And though he was devastated, the future of the dynasty was at stake, so he quickly remarried in 1879, this time to Maria Cristina of Habsburg-Lorraine. Between that time and his untimely death in 1885, 6 years later, the royal couple had 3 children. But Alfonso made room for other relationships, the most famous being with a well-known opera singer named Elena Sanz, with whom he had 2 sons. He is also said to have had a daughter with the wife of the Uruguayan ambassador to Spain, and another relationship with a woman named Adelina Borgi. He died of tuberculosis in 1885 after a short but intense life of procreating. His son, Alfonso XIII, would be next in line. The thing is, he was born after his father died and had to wait until 1902, when he was 16, to assume full powers. 4 years later, he stood at the altar with Victoria Eugenia of Battenberg, Queen Victoria's granddaughter. They were initially quite fond of each other and had 7 children, actually 6 since one was stillborn. But Alfonso soon showed signs that he was intent on following in his father's footsteps. Affairs abounded, and many resulted in children out of wedlock. You had, for example, a married French aristocrat, Melanie of Godfredy, with whom he had a child, Roger Marie. Then he had a fling with Beatrice Noon, the family governess. This is sort of your classic au pair affair. And they had a daughter, Juana Alfonso de Milan. Then there was the Spanish actress, Carmen Ruiz Moragas, which resulted in 2 children, Ana Maria Teresa and Leandro Alfonso. And finally, Carmen Gravina, a daughter who came from his last mistress, an actress named Carmen de Navasquez. Alfonso abdicated in 1931, and his 2 oldest sons renounced the throne. Juan, the 3rd son, held out and declared himself the rightful successor. Even though Franco eventually announced that Spain was officially a monarchy, he snubbed Juan. Both men had a mutual hate for each other, and he named his son, Juan Carlos, as the future king. So even though Juan was never a Bourbon king, he sure behaved like a Bourbon when it came to cheating on his wife. Since he wasn't in the limelight as much, the stories are harder to corroborate, but it seemed there were many, with figures like Zsa Gabor, the famous Hungarian socialite and actress, being among them, which isn't too surprising. Another was a Spanish actress, Nari Mistral. And that brings us to Juan Carlos, whom we already talked about in the first episode and have discussed his tendencies to carry on with the tradition, so to speak. His son Felipe VI, the current king, the next Felipe since Felipe V, who started the dynasty 320 years ago, seems to be scandal-free as we speak. And the sense is that he is hell-bent on making sure it stays that way. He has certainly inherited some pretty heavy baggage from earlier generations and even his most direct family, and now you get the sense that he has taken upon himself and his immediate nucleus, Queen Letizia and their 2 daughters Leonor and Sophia, to save the monarchy from this precarious situation in which it finds itself. They certainly have their work cut out for them. So, After a review of 550 years of palace antics, it seems that the overwhelming conclusion is that the sacredness of marital fidelity was little more than an empty oath sworn at the altar. Though we also saw some clear examples of what many would consider to be acceptable marital behavior, they were more of an exception to the rule. If we consider the fact that these were the heads of state of one of the most conservative Catholic countries throughout the centuries, some listeners might find this to be shocking, but it was much more commonplace than many would have thought. Kings chasing after servants and other ladies in the court, building a list of mistresses as long as the eye can see, was basically what happened. It was the kind of mischief that kings, with their powerful status, tended to do, and you just had to accept it. And I also think that you'd have to admit that calling this tradition or even genetics would be an insult to the scores of women and their unrecognized children who have suffered as a result. And of course, there are the queens. And one day we will have to focus on these women, many of whom were basically children when they were married, let's be blunt about it, and essentially forced to become sort of a blend of baby makers and sex kittens at the same time. Their performance as childbearers was literally a matter of state. And I don't think enough attention has been paid to this, so we're going to have to talk about that on a different occasion. And that'll be all for this episode of Brian's Spain Domain. And with it, we'll wrap up this short series about kings and lovers. Hope you have enjoyed the podcast. Please feel free to leave any comments with us because we love the feedback. Remember, you can subscribe with us on Spotify and Castos, and you are welcome to support us on Patreon. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.